Hello and welcome to another episode of The Volume Knob, the songs that saved your life. This week, Sandy and The Wind Beneath My Wings. Hey friends, how are ya? I hope wherever you are in the world that you are safe and well. This is, of course, The Volume Knob, where we share personal stories about music and the way it makes us feel. As you know, that phrase, that key phrase, the way the music makes us feel, is really central to everything we do around here, because I believe that there are great stories to be found in all sorts of songs, even the ones that you thought you knew and maybe you weren't quite so sure about. Because Wind Beneath My Wings, that's a song that many of us have heard a lot, and I think one that maybe we think we know, but I'm here to tell you two things that you did not know about Wind Beneath My Wings. First of all, there's this, and it exists. Honestly, sometimes making this show leaves me grinning in the most strange and unpredictable ways. From Kemi, Finland, that is, and I'm not making this up, Sonata Arctica, from their Orientation EP with their interpretation of Bette Midler's Wind Beneath My Wings as power metal. Anyway, let me introduce you to something else that will surprise you, this week's storyteller.
I'm Sandy Marks. I'm a New York-based, cynical, but hopeful storyteller. And the song that saved my life is The Wind Beneath My Wings.
Sandy is one of my favorite guests here on TVK. It's really fantastic to have her back. She's our first ever three-time guest. And when you listen to her, you'll see why. Her stories make people write me to talk about how fun and zany and relatable she is. But this week's story she's bringing is more than simply fun. It's also kind of a lovely rumination on complicated relationships and family and hidden talents. It made me smile, and I hope it does the same for you. Here's Sandy.
My friends and I used to have this drinking game. The object was whoever had the most screwed up childhood would have to take a shot of tequila. Now, I don't want to brag, okay, but I always went home the drunkest of all of my friends. There were two reasons that I came away as the winner, and that was Greta and Arnold Handelman. Those are my parents. Growing up with these two odd folks was, well, it was challenging. And my sister and I were basically duck and covering whenever we could in our very tiny bedroom, in our very cluttered, hot apartment in Queens. We were below ground level. We were subterranean. It was considered the ground floor. But from our bedroom, you just saw ankles passing by. And the apartment was so hot because there was a large, what seemed like a furnace pipe in the foyer of our apartment that probably should have been somewhere else, because it was, I think, heating the entire side of the seven-story building. So it was sweltering inside constantly. It's like if you can imagine living in the Titanic in the coal room where those guys are shoveling the coal all day long, completely covered in sweat. Well, that's what our life was like. My parents had a solution, particularly my mother, who decided that her way of coping was not to wear clothes, basically, which was not something necessarily pleasing to anybody's eye. So she would walk around in her brassiere, not a bra, it was a brassiere, because it had about 40 eyes and hooks. This is way before Spanx and Skims, and her lady pants. She was a buxom woman. She was like a 38 double D. She was delicious, big, delicious, juicy woman. And my dad would wear just a men's white undershirt, which was never white. This was the only man I know who could come to breakfast with gravy stains on a t-shirt, which you did not even know where they came from, and his boxer shorts. My mother, she only cooked with Campbell's soup recipes. She had this cookbook called, I'm not kidding, it was called the I Hate to Cook cookbook by a woman named Peg Bracken. And all the recipes involved some version of a protein made with soup. And her favorite was a vegetable meatloaf that had the can of soup with these little alphabet letters on it. So we would sit at the table, my parents sweating like pigs in their underwear, and my sister and I were just watching this happen. And because we're maybe of a Jewish persuasion, nobody eats and talks with their mouth closed. So there's a lot of food flying over every meal. You could see the letters like shooting around, and they would land on my mother's like continental shelf because she just was unaware. She just loved her food, loved her cooking, loved to talk all at the same time. And it was just like being in a rodeo with these two crazy people. And they also fought constantly because my mother could not stand my father. I mean, she really despised him. And she had some reasons to be really angry because the guy couldn't hold a job. The one job he had for a long time was at a crayon factory called Creston. And what seems like, wow, your dad sold crayons? That's so exciting. But they were imitation Crayola crayons. So trying to fill out a coloring book with what really were like waxy Hanukkah candles with a little color in it was really, this was no joyride. These weren't real crayons. They were really basically candlesticks. Every other job he had after that, including driving a cab, he lost because he lost his driver's license. Can you imagine not even being qualified to drive a cab? So he drove my mother crazy. And my mother, God bless her, she did not want any part of this life. She told my sister and I, when I was like 8 years old, that she wanted to be a nightclub singer, that was her dream. She was a singer, and she had gig like at weddings and bar mitzvahs before she met my dad, but she got married when she was 19 years old. So she didn't really have an opportunity to really expand on her talent because she got pregnant right away. And she loved to remind me that she wanted to be a singer, but unfortunately, she got married and had kids. Now, I don't know about anyone out there in the world listening to this, but how would you feel if your mom told you when you were a little kid that she'd really rather be singing than feeding me a vegetarian vegetable Campbell's soup meatloaf? Meanwhile, my father was so madly in love with my mother, and he still thought of her as that 19-year-old jazz singer, that he used to tell my sister and I that, boy, girls, your mom, when I met her, she was built like a brick shithouse. And I had no idea what that meant. I had this image of like bricks formed in shit. And he had explained to me that this was a really good thing to be a brick shithouse. I mean, I'm looking at my mom across the kitchen table in her bra, and I don't see it. Twenty-five years pass, and my parents decide to move to Sunrise, Florida, where all the Jews go in the winter. Not because they're looking for a tax haven, God knows, because they had no money, but they just wanted to go someplace sunny, which again, I don't understand, because they never left their apartment. They would mall walk. They never walked outside. They would walk inside a shopping mall. And my mom calls me one day. She's so excited because she has finally found her calling again, and she's going to start back in her singing career. And she is a part of the Sunrise Serenaders. It is a choir that tours all of Southern Florida, and they are based out of Phase 2 at the Sunrise Condos where she lives in the clubhouse. and they're busy, you know, gigging all over Boca and Miami. And it's amazing. I mean, and she's like their lead singer. And I think to myself, oh God, how, I can't even imagine how this goes. But I mean, 99% of the people there are 99% deaf, and the other 99% are 99. So I figure, I'm sure they all love them. You know, I'm not even thinking of the quality of the song. And then she tells me, like, the playlist. And she said that her big number, the big closer, is when she sings The Wind Beneath My Wings, which I have to admit, I'm not embarrassed to say this, it's one of my favorites, too. It's a great song. I love Beaches. I sobbed through that movie. And I love Bette Midler. And she has a Mr. Microphone at home, which is like a cordless mic. And she sings it, practices it all day long, I'm sure in her brassiere, because she doesn't use the air conditioning in Florida because it's too expensive. And that's her big song. So I'm very proud of her. I've never heard her on the phone as happy as she is now that she has found her voice, literally, down in Sunrise, Florida. And my dad, once again, madly in love, as he always has been, but now putting her on a pedestal because she's become the chanteuse of phase two at Sunrise Lakes Condos. One day she calls me up and she said, Sandy, it's your dad's 70th birthday in a few weeks. I'm going to surprise him with a party. And as a special surprise, I am going to sing my big number, The Wind Beneath My Wings, at the restaurant. I am so excited. You have to fly down, bring all the kids. At the time, my kids were all under, I think, 7 or 8 years old, and bring everybody, and it's going to be great. And I say, great, Mom. All right, we'll figure it out. And meanwhile, I hang up, and I'm like, oh, shit. This is terrifying. Because it's one thing when you're singing in a nursing home, because the stakes are so low. But these are her friends, neighbors, relatives, everyone who's flying in for my dad's birthday. They actually have a critical ear. I don't know what is going to happen. This could be problematic. So I tell my kids, for weeks, I say, listen, no matter what, you're going to tell Grandma she is amazing. You're going to tell her that's the best music you've ever heard. I don't want to hear any laughing, no snickering. And the kids are like, okay, Mom, okay. So we get down there, and my mom, she's jacked. She's so excited. And the surprise is still kept. My dad doesn't know. And we all show up to one of those, do you remember like those restaurants that would call, they'd said chops and cocktails, like seafood chops and cocktails. It said that on the sign in neon, super classy. And it was in a mini mall. I think there was a kidney dialysis next to it on the left. And on the right was a Korean manicure shop. And we all go in there, and it's crowded with all of her friends. Everybody's so excited. My dad comes in. He acts surprised. He's probably not surprised. My mother doesn't know how to keep a secret. And everybody's there. They all pack in. And my mother, I could see she's starting to get nervous because she decided she's going to do the song sometime between like the main course and dessert. Meanwhile, she's hauled in the guy who plays the electric organ, the Casio, basically. So he comes, and they're all wearing their Sunrise Serenader costumes, the guys who are accompanying her. And it's like Hawaiian shirts and white slacks. All of a sudden, my mother comes over to me somewhere during the main course, the chopped chicken or whatever the hell we were eating. And she says, Sandy, I don't have Mr. Microphone. And I asked her, do you want me to go back to the apartment? It was only like 8 minutes away, and I'll go get it. She goes, no, we don't have time. The dessert's coming soon. I said, well, what are you gonna do? She said, I don't know. And then, God bless this buxom dame. God bless this, like, Tyne Daly, like, wrapped up in Ethel Merman. She takes a water glass. It looks like a big, like, goblet, a crystal goblet, and she decides that that's going to be her microphone, because it's apparent that the microphone, it's not about amplification and sound, it's holding something in her hand. That's really why she uses it. She said, I'm going to use my goblet. And I'm thinking, this woman is out of her ever loving mind. And I'm then looking at my kids like, don't laugh, do not laugh. And then all of a sudden she says, Arnold, this is for you. And she gets up, holds onto that goblet, She gets the accompanist to start playing the opening notes, and she starts singing, "Wind Beneath My Wings," holding the goblet. And she is so committed to this bit of her goblet being her microphone that she actually starts moving it back and forth, like as if there's feedback, like as if she's trying to get her levels. And she's like walking around. I thought she was going to like move her hand like to get the wire out of the way. The woman was convinced that her wine goblet or water goblet was actually a microphone. But here's the thing. She is fantastic. Singing into that water glass, she's so good. I'm so proud of this woman, my badass mom, who has been through so much in her life. Disappointment after disappointment. She had to live with my dad. She had to live through disappointment and poverty. But finally, she is having her moment in a chop house with a water glass, singing the best song I know of that day. And well, and the audience is entranced. All of her friends, not a dry eye in the house, including me. My kids, they were still a little embarrassed because they're kids, but I was in awe of this woman. She finally got what she wanted. It took her 70 years, but the woman got what she wanted. She brought down the house. It was really fantastic, no joking. This was probably the best day that I've ever known my mother to have.
But unfortunately, life happens, and 2 years later, Sandy's mom died from complications due to diabetes.
This woman who had so much life in her, she was just finding her literal voice when she was 70, and I was just, you know, dumbstruck, horrified. I mean, this is a horrible thing to say. It was like the parent I actually really loved and cared about and had a sense of union with was gone, and I was left with my dad in his undershirt. You know, it was just a disaster. And we had to do the funeral in New York where all our relatives are. So I had to rent a rabbi because I did not belong to a temple. We rented a beautiful little place to have the service. I think it was actually in the Bronx because that was the place he went. And I decided I would give the eulogy because we obviously don't know this rabbi. So I decide I'm going to give the eulogy. I'm going to tell everybody there what they know already, which is this warm, funny, crazy woman, out and proud, incredibly fun to be with, loving, caring, maybe had life's disappointments, but she didn't let it get in her way of being this bigger than life, truly woman who I looked up to my whole life, even when she drove me insane. I decided I was going to play her favorite song, and I didn't have a recording of her doing it, so I thought, I know, I'll have Bette Midler sing it. So at the time, this was a long time ago, I brought, you know, one of those big, you know, CD players with the speakers, and I put it on the stage or pulpit or whatever it was, and I queued it up to Wind Beneath My Wings. And as soon as I was done telling everybody how amazing my mom was and how what a loss this was, I sit down and I hit play, and it washes over the whole congregation. Again, not a dry eye, listening to Bette Midler, and I'm channeling my mom through Bette Midler, and I'm thinking, I'm the best brilliant daughter. I came up with this. I really know what I'm doing. When I get to the middle of the song, I panic because the same way my mom's panicking about not having Mr. Microphone, I realize that this is not an edited CD. It's the best of Bette Midler. Another song is going to happen after Wind Beneath My Wings. So I have to be at the ready to stop the machinery here, the stereo speak. So the song's almost done. I am perched at the end of my seat. I'm in the first row and I have like my little finger out, but I just miss the cue. And all of a sudden, what washes over that whole congregation is Boogie Woogie Booga Boy. and the cabin, and it's going on and it's going on, and everybody is laughing so hard, and I shut it off because I'm like, oh my God. And I thought about it, and I really did think, like, this is exactly what my mom, Greta Handelman, that bad bitch, that brick shithouse would have loved, that I ended this with everybody laughing, because, you know, I wanted to really grow up and be her, even though we were in, like, this love-hate thing all the time. And what better way to honor my mom is than with Boogie Woogie Bugle Boy and everybody laughing. And so when you want to try to do something right, just do it from the heart. Even when you really screw it up, it's going to work out no matter what you do. And the company Johnson, he plays Reveille. He's the Boogie Woogie Bugle Boy of Company B.
Hey friend, thanks for listening. The Volume Knob is a weekly exploration of music and the way it makes us feel. Many thanks to the talented Sandy Marks for her time and vulnerability this week. Special thanks to her as well for being a really good friend in a troubled time. Be sure to get over to the Volume Knob website, that's www.volumeknob.net, to read show notes with links to all sorts of information about Sandy and her performances, including a link to a movie called The Fabulist, which is a documentary that has been made about Sandy and her storytelling journey. Also, many thanks to Miles for his 30-second review of The Wind Beneath My Wings, which I think gets to the core of what's revolutionary and timeless about the song. So, tell me what you think.
It's very generic. I'll give it that. It sounds like that... I can't put a finger in it. It either sounds like the song that would be played before the opening act to, like, a presidential campaign in a city. It seems very much like that. And or the one non-religious song being played at the church over their sound system. And I can't put a finger in which one it is because it's very much both. And I can't tell which one it is more specifically, but it fits both of those categories, and honestly, that's just about all I have to say about it.
I'm just a little confused as to why you say you can't put a finger in it, as opposed to can't put a finger on it.
Oh. That sounds weird, and we're going to completely...
Like the little Dutch boy with the dike, making sure that the dike doesn't break. You're going to put a finger in it.
That sounds weird, and we are going to completely ignore... okay. Are we done here?
I think so, yeah. As always, The Volume Knob is produced by Semlevin Audio, and it is hosted, mixed, edited, written, and sound designed by me. My name is Keith Seri, and I'm the podcast producer with Montreal's third or fourth largest collection of rubber fright masks. In fact, during our interview, I wore one to try and impress Sandy a little bit. I think it worked.
Oh shit, this is terrifying.
I'll see you in 2 weeks with another story about the songs that saved your life.